Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello and welcome back to ACRAC. I'm Jed Wolpaw, and I am really excited for a great and impactful show today. I've got two guests, which will be a lot of fun, who are both experts in perioperative handoffs. And that's what we're going to talk about, something that is really hot. It's been talked about a lot, both in the news and certainly in the literature. And we're going to learn from them about what's going on, what do we need to know about handoffs. So I have two, again, people, as I said, with me. First, Dr. Jamie Sparling, who is an anesthesiologist and intensivist at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. She's been a member of the Multicenter Handoff Collaborative, and you'll learn what that is in a little bit, for 5 years, and she currently co-chairs the Communications Working Group. Her other professional interests include the anesthetic and critical care of trauma and burn patients, perioperative nutrition optimization, and OR clinical operations. My second guest is Dr. Alok Agarwala, who is an anesthesiologist and associate chief medical officer and vice president of quality and safety for Massachusetts General Hospital and Mass Eye and Ear in Boston, where he's responsible for leading institutional efforts in patient safety, quality reporting, and quality improvement. Also clinical compliance and patient experience. He's a co-founder and current chair of the Multicenter Handoff Collaborative. So Jamie and Alok, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jed. Thanks for having us.
So let's start with just learning a little bit about the two of you. Alok, why don't we start with you? Tell us a little bit about who you are, how you got interested in handoffs, and anything else you want to let our audience know.
Sure. So, as I said, I'm an anesthesiologist. I trained in Boston at Mass General and came onto the faculty and was doing a bunch of different things on the faculty. And a few years in, was nominated by my chair, actually, to participate in a sort of professional development program that was put together for a bunch of sort of mid-career, early and mid-career anesthesiologists across the Harvard hospitals in Boston. And as part of that program, it was a couple of days of didactics with the professors from MIT. And part of it was over a 6 month period, we had to choose something to make better in our departments. And it was going to be something that it was going to require some organizational change. It was going to have the buy-in of our leadership, and we had to go and get that buy-in. We were going to have a little bit of coaching from some of the MIT faculty to help us get through it. And so I was part of a group of five people, and we recognized that there was a lot of variability around how cases were handed off intraoperatively, right? So when one team, when one resident or attending came in to take over a case at 5 p.m. from the person who was giving that case over, you know, sometimes there would be a nice structured way of letting the incoming provider know what was going on. And sometimes it was, hey, yeah, he's fine. 35 years old. He's totally healthy. Everything went great. See you later. And we recognized that this was, you know, a potential problem. And there was starting to be some, you know, little papers here and there that were recognizing that this could be maybe done better. And I think as we were thinking about areas where we could provide or add some structure to something that might make an improvement, we thought this might be something we could attack. And so we did. We put together a proposal for an electronic checklist that we could use at the handoff, the intraoperative shift change handoff that we, you know, so often have at the end of our days. We got the buy-in of our leadership and our IT folks and put together a kind of rudimentary but thoughtful 10-item checklist that tried to bring some things forward that were already documented in the electronic medical record while also leaving some opportunity for conversation. And we got it done in 3 or 4 months and did a quick little study and measured sort of how much information was transferred and retained by the both giving provider, how much did they actually say about that patient in relation to things like fluids and medications and the airway. And then how much did the incoming provider remember afterwards, right? So we went back 15 minutes later after they hand off and asked them some questions about, you know, when's your next dose of neuromuscular blockade due? When's the next antibiotic due? And see, just see if they could remember what was handed off to them. And we did a, you know, a little small pre-post study that showed that use of a checklist really dramatically increased the amount of information that people were both sharing, and more importantly, the information that the incoming providers were remembering about that handoff. And so that's how we got started. That's how I got started. It was this study, and that led to me writing my first manuscript, which was a huge barrier in my own head of how to actually share what we learned, and got me started down this path of handoffs. And then from there, we went from intra-op handoffs to looking at post-operative handoffs in the PACU to thinking about ICU handoffs. And I've had, you know, had the opportunity to work on a whole bunch of different handoff improvement projects since then. And we'll talk a little bit more, I think, about the MHC in a little bit, but, has also led to this, you know, wonderful, opportunity to try to grow a community, across the country, of people interested in trying to improve handoffs.
Fabulous. That is really a great story and shows how one project that you may not know where it may take you can take you into really becoming an expert in something. So that's just a great lesson for a lot of folks out there. Jamie, how about you? Tell us a little bit about you and how you got interested in the topic.
Well, thanks for having us today. I'm so excited to be on ACRAC. I've been a listener, I think, from the very beginning when I was a resident. And like Alok, I did my training here at MGH. So I did my anesthesia residency and critical care fellowship. And that's when I got involved in perioperative handoffs. So I think as a CA2, maybe, I had an interest in patient safety and quality improvement. And one of my clinical mentors, Dr. Leah Tron, was actually doing the same process improvement program that Alok had done a few years earlier. And we were at this really interesting point in our organization where we were adopting a new electronic medical record. So we're implementing Epic. And what happened to our postoperative handoffs to the PACU is that our process that was really, you know, pretty well defined before kind of got blown up. And we were wondering, how do we do this better? How do we help guide our clinicians, both on the anesthesia side, but also on the PACU nursing side, through this transition, and what tools can we equip them with? And so it was really exciting for me as a resident to get to participate in this multidisciplinary sort of effort to define not only what the content of the OR to PACU handoff should be, but also what should the conduct be? So who does what order do we do it in, whose responsibility is whose, and you know, when does that transition? And so it was exciting to work through that, to do process mapping, to get some opportunities with working across disciplines and across different role groups. And then to be part of the measurement of that as well. So we did observations, like in a Alok study, we were able to show improvement in terms of the information transferred and also the provider satisfaction. And we were able to present that at ASA. And it really made an impact on me in terms of my, you know, interests and my career opportunities in terms of patient safety and quality. And then the second part of it came during my ICU fellowship here. So I thought it was really interesting that as a resident, you know, you come onto the ICU rotation for a month and then you leave. And even as a faculty member now, we come on service for a week at a time. But when you're an ICU fellow, you're there the entire year. You know these patients, and not just their ICU course, but you know their course back and forth between the OR multiple times, between endoscopy, between IR, bouncing back and forth to the floor, to rehab. You have deep relationships with the patients and with their families, but you also have this context of what their overall course has been, what are their priorities, what have, you know, the idiosyncrasies been along the way of how they respond to certain medications or issues that they've had. And that's information that doesn't come out in the electronic medical record. And it really highlighted to me the importance of having, you know, in-person warm handoffs, both on the ICU to OR transition and also coming back from the OR to the ICU. And so that brought me back to Alok, and we worked together to revamp some earlier work on ICU to OR handoffs, particularly after we came out of COVID. And again, sort of our processes were blown up. So we looked at how to do that. We measured some improvement, and that's how I got excited about the ICU side. And in terms of right now, actually later today, we're doing an educational workshop for our new residents. So as they come on board, we've been able to sustain this now for 6 or 7 years, focusing on PACU and ICU handoffs. And then we are launching an effort to look at ED to OR handoffs as well. So that's been my interest as of late.
Very cool. This is such important work, and I'm really grateful to both of you for doing it. So let's start very basic. What are perioperative handoffs? It may seem like that's an obvious question, but I think let's just start with a very good understanding. What do we mean when we say a perioperative handoff? Alok, do you want to give us some idea there?
Sure. So the definition of a handoff in the healthcare setting, I think, has been written by a number of different folks, but and essentially it's a transfer of the role and responsibility of the care of the patient from one team to another team, from one individual to another team. The Joint Commission has defined it as a transfer and acceptance of patient care responsibility achieved through effective communication as a real-time process where patient-specific information is being transferred from one caregiver to another to ensure continuity and safety of the patient's care. In the perioperative space, we have quite a lot of different transitions. So there's not a single definition of what a perioperative handoff is because our patients, you know, in the most common scenario, come from home into a pre-op area, some holding area, from which then they go to the operating room and then to the post-anesthesia care unit and then home, perhaps in a day surgery. But our patients, as we all know, also come from the emergency room. They come from the ICU. They come from the floor. They may go to a holding room. They may come directly into the operating room. When they leave the OR, they may go to a PACU, but they may go to an ICU. But that's not it, right? We do anesthesia in places far beyond the operating room, outside. I mean, we take care of patients in the EP lab and in the GI suite and in interventional radiology and in all of those places. What's so challenging about the perioperative handoff is that we've got lots of different providers that are involved in the care of these patients. We've got nurses, we have techs, we have anesthesia residents, we have nurse anesthetists, we have attending physicians, we have critical care physicians. And depending on which of these handoffs you look at, there can be quite a you know, sort of different set of expectations that the giving and receiving providers have, quite a different set of knowledge and skills and background that they're coming to those handoffs with. And so trying to create a shared mental model for what has been going on with the patient and what should be happening with the patient next, that's ultimately what we're trying to get to with an effective perioperative handoff, with any handoff, not just in the perioperative period, but trying to achieve that shared mental model of what's really important for this patient, what has happened in the last, you know, period of time that I've been taking care of them and what's going to be important for you. That's what we're trying to get at. That's what makes for an effective handoff. But it can be, you know, sort of challenging because of all the things that I mentioned. I'll add one more thing there that, you know, we also don't do handoffs perioperatively the same as say our internal medicine colleagues might. You know, we don't have the luxury of always being able to sit quietly in a room or separate ourselves from the rest of what's going on in patient care to talk about our patients. We are often doing these handoffs in environments that are noisy and chaotic with monitors going off with alarms and sometimes patient care needing to be provided in the midst of the handoff, right? We got to give another drug. We got to address, you know, changing the position of the bed for the surgeon, all these things while we're actually doing handoffs. Never mind, if we take, for example, the ICU patient that's going down to the operating room, who might be on a vent, might have ECMO, might have, you know, how many, you know, different lines and tubes of critical medications that you got to make sure all of that equipment and stuff gets transferred over in a safe way, while then also providing the information about that patient to the next providing team. So, I think we've got a lot of challenges, I would say, in the perioperative handoff that I think are unique to our environment.
It is amazing, given just hearing you kind of go over all the different people that are involved, all the different aspects, all the different ways and times and you know, people who can be doing these handoffs. It is amazing that I think in most places they are done with the assumption that we're just going to be able to do it, right? Like there's not really a good set tool for this in a lot of places, or at least in the past there hasn't been. And so it's just like, we can figure this out, but it's such a complex thing. And here you lay it all out really drives that home that we can't just trust our ability to do all this on the fly. But we'll hear more about that from you all. So Jamie, why do handoffs matter, right? I mean, we just heard how complex they are. So we presumably shouldn't be doing them just to do them. We're doing them because we think it's important to do them. So why? Why is it important?
Yeah, absolutely, Jen. So I think to any clinician listening, I think it's going to be apparent that handoffs are obviously like a vulnerable time where we have to transfer information and equip the receiver of the handoff to be prepared to take care of this patient. We do know from data from the Joint Commission that up to 80% of serious medical errors involve miscommunication during the handoff between different medical providers. So we know this is a leading cause of sentinel events, that it's a leading cause of morbidity and mortality. And so it's really important for us to look at that. When we think about information transfer, which is what comes to mind first when you're thinking about handoffs, we can see harm whenever the information that's transferred is inaccurate. So it's just, not the right information. You've given false information. If it's incomplete, so if there's something really important that's been left out, if it's not communicated in a timely fashion, so if it's something that comes back later, you send out a page, I forgot to tell you this, sometimes that information can cause errors. If the information is misinterpreted, that's why it's really important to have kind of a read back and a synthesis. And even if it's extraneous, so not every handoff needs every element of information transferred. But there's also additional purposes of handoffs that we don't think about as often. So back in 2010, Patterson and Wares actually defined 7 different purposes of handoffs. And that's been built on more recently with Webster and colleagues, where they looked at different ways that we can measure the effectiveness of handoffs across these 7 different purposes. So the first one is information processing, and that's what we mean in terms of the content of the handoff. And that's really easy to measure in terms of how many of the elements were included in a handoff, how many omissions there were. The second thing that we create with a handoff is this idea of a stereotypical narrative. So a shared idea of who the patient is, what's going on. And we can measure that by looking at sort of the information that was extracted from the handoff. So not just the individual elements, but our ability to create a shared understanding. We also know that handoffs have an opportunity to improve resilience. So if we think about the assumptions that we make about patients and the conclusions that we come to, having another set of eyes to cross-check that with can be really effective in either confirming or refuting those assumptions that we've made. We know that handoffs improve accountability. So if you think even about some of the well-publicized sort of handoff mnemonics like IPASS, for instance, there's next steps that are included. And so that creates accountability and can improve task completion and also allows the opportunity to look at what tasks are appropriately transferred or inappropriately. We know, and I think this is intuitive to many of us in anesthesia, where we're often alone in the room and a handoff might be a great opportunity to see some of our colleagues. So it improves social interaction and improves the quality of our interprofessionalism as we think about different role groups within anesthesia. And we think about the different disciplines that we interact with, like Alok was laying out for us. The sixth element is this idea of distributed cognition. So creating a shared sense of the patient and allowing for effective coordination of care. And we can measure that in terms of technical errors that occur. And then the last thing, I think, reiterating on that social interaction, but it also helps to establish cultural norms. So by prioritizing handoffs, by aligning the content, by educating our trainees and one another on how to do this well, and then adopting that, so creating a safe space, creating a priority, really helps us to reinforce that the culture, the way that we do things around here, is prioritizing patient safety. Our anesthesia providers are comfortable doing this. We trust one another. And these are our values and the types of behaviors that we want to reinforce as an institution. And so I think that's another positive that can come out of handoffs. We're hopeful that by establishing these different purposes and equipping our providers to do this well, we can actually do things like improve burnout. So if we effectively are able to hand off cases, obviously you think about work-life balance, and just, you know, allowing providers to take care of themselves. But we can also eliminate some of the rework that takes time. So if information is accurately transferred, you can prevent the receiving provider from having to do that rework. Can also decrease resource utilization if we know about testing that has occurred, and maybe prevent some unnecessary testing. So as much as we look at handoffs as being a time of vulnerability and sometimes associated with adverse events, it can also be a great opportunity to get that another set of eyes involved and to learn something.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I love the idea of framing it that way, because I think you're right. It's often seen as something to get over with as quickly as possible. And, you know, kind of, or if you're looking at it from a QI standpoint, maybe it's this dangerous area, but it can be, I think if done well, an opportunity to really feel like you're providing good care. And like you said, and I hadn't thought about that, but actually just getting a colleague's input, it's kind of like a, you know, sometimes we shouldn't be, but sometimes we're a little reluctant to ask a colleague for help and advice. But if it's built in, then this is kind of a way to do that without feeling like you're having to ask for it. So I like that a lot. So Alok, let's talk about the Multi-Center Handoff Collaborative, or MHC. We've talked now about how important handoffs are, but let's talk about how this came to be. What is the MHC? How did it come to be? You were one of the founders, so tell us about it.
Sure. Thanks for that question. So Philip Krylik, who's a cardiac anesthesiologist at UT Southwestern, was starting his journey in trying to improve perioperative handoffs at his institution back in 2014, 2015. And he reached out to a number of us that had published or were interested in kind of working on handoffs. And so I was one of the people, Megan Lane Fall from the University of Pennsylvania, Amanda Lawrence and Arna Banerjee from Vanderbilt, Attilio Barbado from Duke. Really the five of us, he invited us all to kind of sit together and just chat at one of the American Society of Anesthesiologists annual meetings that year in October of 2015. So we found a little dark corner of the convention center and just opened a conversation. He was curious about how we were doing what we were doing and what we were finding as he was, you know, sort of starting on his journey of trying to improve handoffs at UT Southwestern. And what started as this group of five, you know, over time has grown to be something that we're really quite proud of with more than 100 folks, you know, working together across 25 different organizations. But the first steps of that, we went from talking with each other to thinking about how we could create, you know, sort of better idea of what was happening around the country and what people were thinking about. And we pitched this idea of doing a consensus conference to the Anesthesia Patient Safety Foundation. The APSF, as many know, is, you know, a really a wonderful organization dedicated to improving the care of our patients and reducing harm. And every year they have a small conference of about 100 to 150 people that they bring together to reach consensus on some topic for which there's not a great evidence base, right? Not a whole bunch of randomized clinical trials to be able to say, here's the right thing to do, but let's get experts together and see if we can come together to think about, you know, recommendations we can make for the greater community. And handoffs were exactly, you know, sort of fit that mold. We didn't have, there still isn't great RCT evidence for what to do and how to do it, but a lot of people have some good ideas. And so we did pitch to them and then organized the conference for 2017, using a Delphi process and to reach consensus on a number of statements related to how best to do handoffs and what we should be researching and how to provide, you know, what we should be measuring, what we should be, how we should be performing them, who should be involved in them, and what kind of tools and structure should we have to that process. So that was really a major milestone for the group, is that conference that led to a consensus statement that was published, you know, following that conference in ANA. And then, you know, a couple of different projects. So one of the things that we recognized was that there really ought to be a structured process as part of the handoff, and that we should be using our EMR, the electronic medical record, to help us with that, to bring information forward that is relevant at the time of handoff, and not just relying on people to, you know, take notes on a little post-it or something before a handoff, but to give it some structure and to provide some prompts for folks to have that conversation, to bring that shared mental model and sort of make it routine. So we reached out to Epic, actually, and Epic, you know, at the time had a pretty good market share, now has even a greater market share when it comes to electronic medical record penetration, at least amongst academic medical centers. And we said, you know, we're a bunch of folks at sort of, you know, large AMCs, and we all have Epic, and we think we can do this better. Would you be interested in working with us to create a tool that everyone could have in Epic? And surprisingly, they said, yes, sure. Yeah, that's great. Let's work together. And so with over a 2-year period, with folks from the MHC working with Epic project managers and their programmers, we worked together to create a tool in Epic that could be provided out of the box for every Epic customer around the country. It was based, you know, on our expert, you know, sort of consensus ourselves and the tools that we had built initially at Mass General Hospital and some that had been, you know, done at other places, including Hopkins. And we, you know, that sort of launched after 2 years of work in August of 2019. And we'll come back to this but really that was a great moment, because I think it showed that we could, with dedication and effort, you know, collaboration with industry, with an industry partner, could create something that could have broad-based impact to try to improve handoffs. And, you know, we at least thought it would help. We didn't know at that time whether it would help, but we thought, you know, this is something that maybe could help. We went from that and then shifted, and I'm going to hand it off to Jamie here, because she really was a one of the leaders of this. And we turned our attention a little bit to thinking about how we could do research better in the handoff space, right? What were the unanswered questions, and what did we need to think about nationally to push this conversation further? And so we had this idea of putting together a conference focused on thinking about research. And Jamie, you want to talk a little bit about HERO?
Sure. So in late 2019 or so, a group of researchers from MHC put together a research conference grant application to the AHRQ, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, to have a research conference where we could bring together stakeholders from academic institutions all across the U.S., but also other partner groups. So vendors like Epic and others, sort of startups that are in this space, folks that think about education, people from implementation science to ergonomics, to data science. So a lot of different disciplines that could collaborate. And we were successful in getting funding for the AHRQ. And we were thinking about how we could do this most effectively. And we came up with the idea of doing a design studio, which I can explain a little bit further. But we called this conference or design studio the Handoff Effectiveness Research and Perioperative Environments, or HERO Design Studio. And a few of us had participated in the idea of a design studio before, but basically what this is instead of a typical research conference where you might have lectures or panels or poster presentations, we actually, you know, work more open-ended. We brainstorm ideas, and then we rapidly seek feedback from one another to prioritize, to deprioritize, to poke holes in the idea, to identify vulnerabilities so that as teams, we could make them better. And so each of these ideas develops into a prototype. And over the course of 2 days, we did this virtually. We engaged over 100 different individuals from 44 separate organizations, and we created these prototypes. In the end, we prioritized 18 of them, and they spanned a few different themes for future research on handoffs. Those were around global recognition and integration, teams and culture, process identification and improvement, tools and cognitive aids, and education and training. And so coming out of the design studio, this gave us our priorities and opportunities to work together to form coalitions across different organizations and to inform future work. A couple of those prototypes were highlighted in the Joint Commission Journal on Quality and Patient Safety. So shortly after the HERO Design Studio, we had a special issue on perioperative handoffs that was published in August of 2023. And so this showcased work, not only coming out of the design studio, but also the individual work that our MHC members do at their home institutions, and looked at opportunities around artificial intelligence and machine learning in perioperative handoff improvement, some ideas on implementation science and how we can better implement these one-off handoff improvement projects on a local basis, as well as human factors and ergonomics and resilience engineering. So I will definitely make sure that that's listed with the show notes so folks can check out those articles on their own.
Very cool. Awesome. All right. So we've talked, and you two mentioned earlier that, you know, there is some evidence for harm to patients coming from presumably poorly done or lack of handoffs. So Alok, do you want to tell us a little bit more about that? Do handoffs actually cause harm? And if so, how? Stay with us. We'll be right back with the answer to that question. Hey folks, have you heard about senolytics yet? It's a class of ingredients discovered less than 10 years ago, and they're being called the biggest discovery of our time for promoting healthy aging and enhancing your physical prime. As we age, everyone accumulates senescent cells in their body. Senescent cells are thought to contribute to symptoms of aging, such as aches, discomfort, slow workout recoveries, sluggish mental and physical energy. I don't know about you, but I don't recover anywhere near as fast as I did 20 years ago. Qualia Senolytic from Neurohacker, taken just 2 days a month, can really help. And it has a 100-day money-back guarantee. So if it doesn't work for you, you haven't lost anything. When I started taking it myself, I noticed a definite increase in energy and mood and a faster recovery from workouts. Resist aging at the cellular level. Try Qualia Senolytic. Go to qualialife.com/ACRAC for 50% off and use code ACRAC at checkout for an additional 15% off. That's qualialife.com/ACRAC for an extra 15% off your purchase. Thanks to Qualia for sponsoring today's episode.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
All right, and we're back.
Sure. There have been actually now quite a number of studies that have been published in the last 10 years looking at the association of perioperative handoffs with harm. Now, if you think about the types of perioperative handoffs we do, I talked a little bit earlier about, you know, patients coming from a pre-op area to the OR and from the OR out to the PACU. Those OR to PACU cases, for example, happen in every single case, right? So a little difficult to tell whether a handoff on its own has an effect if you're just looking at the presence of a handoff, because every single case has a handoff. You really have to look at the quality of those handoffs to understand whether, you know, a poor handoff versus a good handoff makes a difference. And that, just in fairness, is incredibly resource intensive. To have somebody observing and monitoring the quality of those handoffs takes a lot of manpower, people power, and hours to do that. So you don't see a lot of studies that are doing that. There are a handful. But what we have had in the last 10 years are actually a whole bunch of large retrospective database studies looking at intraoperative handoffs, because you can easily tell based on administrative and other electronic medical record data whether there was a handoff or not, and then associate that with perioperative outcomes, right? Postoperative morbidity and mortality. And so a whole host of these studies have been done now, and I'll talk about a few of them that I think are really key, that have looked to see whether the presence of a handoff or the presence of multiple handoffs can be associated with worsened patient outcomes. Things like mortality, obviously, and morbidity, right? And many of these studies have done things slightly differently, but essentially they're looking at the same postoperative morbidities. Things like cardiac morbidity, kidney injury, respiratory morbidity, these sort of composite, a lot of them use composite metrics, but almost all of them use data points that are otherwise externally reported. So things that were already reported to CMS or reported to the ACS's NISQIP, the National Surgical Quality Improvement Project, outcomes that can be measured with high reliability. The first of these studies was in 2014. Dr. Sager and colleagues at Cleveland Clinic published a study in anesthesiology looking at about 140,000 cases at the Cleveland Clinic. And what they showed was that with every handoff that occurred intraoperatively, there was an 8% increased odds of complications, this composite that they used of morbidity and mortality, including cardiac, respiratory, GI, urinary, et cetera. And that didn't matter whether it was an attending anesthesiologist or a resident or a nurse anesthetist. They found that held true. In 2015, Hudson and colleagues published a single center retrospective study about 14,000 cases in Ottawa, Canada. They showed a 27% greater risk of major morbidity and a 43% greater risk of in-hospital mortality when a handoff occurred. Joe Heider at the Mayo Clinic did a smaller study, 900 patients in colorectal surgery patients at the Mayo Clinic, and showed a 52% increase in post-op complications as the number of anesthesiologists increased. The following year, Maxim Terekov and some of his colleagues at Vanderbilt actually published a negative study. So they looked at Vanderbilt at 140,000 cases and found no difference whether there was a handoff that had occurred or not. And actually found that when breaks were given, right, so for a short handoff period, that actually those breaks were associated with a 6.7% decrease in the odds of complications postoperatively, right? So an interesting point there. I will note that at the time, Matt Wanger, who is really one of our leading patient safety scientists in anesthesia, was concurrently doing a pretty expansive post-operative handoff improvement project that has been well published and referenced at Vanderbilt at the same time. So some of us do wonder whether there was some bleed over, right? If you do improvement work in one area, whether that also leads to a cultural change and people being more conscious of it. So maybe that was something that was going on at the same time. There have been other studies after that. So Jones in 2018, Hannon in 2020. Again, big cases, 300,000 cases, 100,000 cases, a couple of studies from Ontario, Canada, and from New York that looked at cardiac surgery patients, and both found similar kinds of things. Risk difference of 6.8% in the Jones study published in JAMA in 2018 of increased death and major complications. Risk ratio of 1.15, so 15% increase for complications and length of stay in the Hannon study in 2020. And then another study that came out in 2022, Louise Sun and her colleagues looking at 100,000 cases in Ontario, Canada, that actually found a hazard ratio of almost 1.9 in that case. So there's a lot of data now. I will say that all of these studies, you know, are retrospective. They're cohort studies. They've been controlled as well as they can be controlled, but they're not prospective randomized controlled trials. There is one RCT that was done and published in 2022 in JAMA in Germany, looking at 12 German centers where the care is provided primarily by attending anesthesiologists. And they did not find a difference with handoff versus no handoff when looking at their outcomes of mortality, readmission, and serious complications. So I think it's probably safe to say that the overwhelming number of studies that have been published looking at intraoperative handoffs would conclude that there is harm from handoffs. We don't know exactly why, right? These studies can't give us that kind of granularity. But the overwhelming evidence is that, yes, handoffs are associated with postoperative increases in mortality and morbidity. And so then the next question really is, like, what can we do to mitigate that harm?
Yeah. Really interesting. Do you have any thoughts on why the randomized trial in Germany that you mentioned didn't show a difference? I mean, is there any, you know, thought? It seems so counter to all the other, or almost all the other work that had been done.
Yeah, I think when we're looking at that study and trying to understand it, I think it was really in that situation that they looked at handoffs specifically when the intraoperative anesthetist had changed, and not when the attending anesthesiologist had changed, right? So you had some continuity of care, I would say, with an attending anesthesiologist that persisted. They were looking at the trainee or the CRNA being, you know, the changing between cases. So I think that's probably the biggest question that I would have, is that the practice model and what they exactly look, you know, what exactly they looked at is a little different than what we're thinking about, what most of these other studies are looking at. So that's probably what it is. But I think we're, you know, we'd love to see more RCT data. It's just hard to get funding to do this kind of work, but that would be the ideal.
Yeah. And then the study that showed the kind of short breaks might improve outcomes, presumably that's because people are getting a break. They're then kind of renewing their vigilance, and they're not sort of in there, you know, tired and hungry and thirsty and not able to focus.
Yeah. And also, I think something that Jamie referred to earlier is that sometimes you get a second set of eyes that comes in, right? And so Jeff Cooper, who is, you know, one of the real leaders in patient safety and anesthesia, made this observation back in 1989, right? That short breaks might actually be helpful. And that's what that Terikov study showed as well. And in part of that is that when you have a new set of eyes that come in, they might see things a little differently than you did when you've been in that case for hours at that point. They might catch something that you weren't really paying attention to, and make little tweaks that then result in better patient care, right? And so there is some benefit to having a second set of eyes kind of come in, but, you know, without losing that continuity in this case, right? So that's what the break does, is it sort of gives you that second set of eyes, but it doesn't break the continuity of care.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. All right. So Jamie, let's talk about what the MHC has been doing to try to address the harm associated with handoffs, or presumably to try to prevent it.
Sure. So the MHC, I think in addition to a lot of the research that we've referenced at our individual institutions, has also had a collaboration with Epic, I think as Alok referred to earlier, to develop an interoperative handoff tool. So basically what the MHC did was convene this working group with frontline anesthesia experts. So folks that had done this work at their individual institutions, and also who were just expert clinicians that knew what should be involved in a handoff, what factors were important, and maybe what factors were less important. And they teamed up with a development team from Epic to develop the standardized interop handoff tool. Over the course of about 2 years, the working group identified the critical elements for the tool, and they tested software usability, they got feedback, and basically the Epic team was able to design a standardized interop handoff tool that's really accessible to anybody, any institution that uses Epic. They've launched a couple of different iterations at this point. So the first one came out in 2019, and then a newer version early in 2020. And the unique thing about this is that while it's a standardized tool, it's something that we can kind of customize according to those local practices. And they demonstrated that the work on complex healthcare processes that's so critical to patient safety, like handoffs, can be performed on a national scale through cross-industry collaboration. I think this sets like a really important precedent for how we can collaborate across industry, across different institutions, and really create useful tools for clinicians to leverage.
Fabulous.
Alok, do you want to talk about how Saha and Segal at Wake Forest use this tool to improve care?
Yeah, sure. So I mentioned earlier, right, we created this tool and did this work to create this tool, but didn't really know whether it was going to help. And I think one thing that your readers really ought to know from today's podcast and check out is we're really happy and proud to see the first of several studies, but that was published a couple of months ago in Anesthesiology. Saha and Segal at Wake Forest used this tool that we had created and did a quality improvement project around it. So they had noted they wanted to look at handoffs, and handoffs actually are part of the MPOG suite of quality improvement metrics that some of your listeners may be familiar with as well. Many of the institutions around the country participate in this registry related QI program as well. And so they had noted that people weren't really doing handoffs very well in their own institution. And they thought, well, we've got this Epic tool. Why don't we see if we can measure how well people will use the tool and whether using the tool will actually improve outcomes. So the first part of their study was a sort of retrospective look back at doing essentially the same study as the others that we described, looking back to see whether handoffs were associated with harm. And using a composite of morbidity and mortality using something called the PSI 90, which is a CMS-driven patient safety indicator composite. They came up with essentially the same risk of harm, an odds ratio of 1.08, an 8% increased risk of harm with a handoff in cases that had handoffs versus those that did not. That was the first portion. So they used that then to drive their argument that said to their staff, hey, listen, we want you to use this tool that's in Epic to improve your handoffs. This tool being a standardized electronic medical record checklist that could improve conversation around the time of handoff. And they measured over time the use of that tool as they were encouraging people to do it, right? So they did their own study of their own patients that said, look, this harm is not just out there at those other places. It's actually here at our place too. We did that study. We know that harm exists in our place. And now we want you to use this tool because we think it's going to make things better. And they measured before and after implementation of this tool. And what they found is that as the rate of use of the tool went up, initially from the 25-35% range when they started, up to more than 90% when they finished this QI project, that nearly sort of mirroring the increase in the rate of the usage of the tool was a decrease in the rate of harm, to the point that when 90% of the folks were using the tool, the risk ratio for complications was at 1, meaning nearly all of the harm associated with the handoff had been eliminated by use of this electronic checklist. We all know that a checklist alone is not enough to make things better. It is a cultural change. It is a process. It's getting people to believe that if we do things differently, if we have a conversation about this, it's going to make patient care better. It's not just a checklist. You can't just drop a checklist in and expect that people are going to use it and that it's going to be used, you know, perfectly well. And we actually know that from other data as well. If you look at, since many, many studies looking at implementation of the surgical safety checklist, this huddle, timeout, debrief process that most of us have in our institutions, there's places that have implemented that all over the world, and not everywhere has seen the same degree of reduction in harm from implementation of that checklist. But the places that do it well and do it because the people who are doing it believe in it have had the greatest benefit from it. Their patients have seen the greatest benefit from it. So I'm not saying that the checklist is alone enough, right? But use and good use of the checklist as part of a cultural change process, we think at Wake Forest, at least, can, you know, reduce the harm to patients. So that, and that reference will, you know, be in the show notes for people to check out. But it was, again, in Anesthesiology in March of 2024, that just came out. So
that's great. And yeah, it reminds me of the central line checklist, right? Where it's, you know, does it really matter if the drape covers the toes of the patient, right? Is that what makes the difference between a central line infection or not? No, but if you're being so careful that you're making sure the toes are covered, then you're probably also being really careful with everything else. And so similarly, having these checklists and having a culture where they are carefully followed, doesn't really matter if every single piece of the checklist is essential. It's that doing it and building that culture around the importance of it and paying close attention to patient safety is going to pay dividends. And that's clearly what was seen in this study. So I'm really glad that was recently published. Let's then talk, Jamie, about other. So this Epic handoff tool was, as we just heard from Alok, did show a pretty impressive improvement. What about, are there other handoffs that have been studied that have shown that they're effective?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if any of us right now pulled up PubMed and looked for OR to PACU handoffs or OR to ICU handoffs, we would come up with probably dozens of different studies that have been published looking at handoff improvement efforts. Most of these are somewhat limited by being smaller single center studies and sort of a before after sort of quality improvement type of focus. But what's common across them is one, defining what the content of the handoff should be, supporting that often with cognitive aids. But secondly, importantly, to Alok's point, is sort of educational efforts and culture change around handoff being a priority. And so rather than go through all those different studies, I think one study that summarizes it nicely is a meta-analysis that was published a couple years ago by Liz Lazara and her colleagues at Emory Riddle. And it was published in Ergonomics. And they conducted a meta-analysis of 41 different publications that had postoperative anesthesia handoffs, either to the PACU or to the ICU. and they implemented a standardized protocol. And they looked at outcomes across four different dimensions. One was patient outcomes, obviously clinical improvement, but the others were provider outcomes, organizational outcomes, and the last was just around handoff outcomes themselves. And not surprisingly, I think with what Alok has already shared with us with intraoperative handoffs, having a standardized tool improved patient outcomes with an odds ratio of about 1.5. But I think what's even more impressive is that if we look at provider outcomes, so again, I'm thinking back to the sense of teamwork, the sense of having a shared understanding of the patient, provider outcomes improved with an odds ratio of just over 4, and organizational outcomes, getting to safety culture, improved with an odds ratio of about 4.25. So I think that that demonstrates that it's not the handoff checklist itself. You know, there's no magic bullet there, but having a protocol around it, making this a priority for organizations, educating one another about what should be included, why it's important, and developing the processes that support it, I think is what helps us to drive improved care for our patients, but also improvement for us as clinicians and for organizations as well.
Fabulous. And there's such exciting work being done. This is really just a, you know, I mentioned earlier that it seems like not long ago, there was just nothing. And so, you know, really this is an exciting area with a lot that's happening. And so Alok, what's the future? Where are we going next in the area of perioperative handoffs?
So I think there's a lot, you know, to be done still, because we are starting to understand that yes, there's harm associated with, we think there's harm associated with handoffs, and maybe there's tools that we can use, but people are not really using the tools in a widespread way yet. And so I think one of the key things we need to do is continue to create awareness that there are things that can help. And actually for many of our institutions, those things already exist in your OR today. They don't need to be complicated in order to be able to provide some structure to this thing that is happening, you know, tens of thousands of times a day right now, with procedures across the country. So that's, I think job number one is to continue to create awareness, about what already exists. Second, we are working, MHC is continuing to work with Epic. We have, enjoyed a longstanding fruitful relationship and are continuing to work with them to expand the suite of tools from the intraoperative handoff, to an OR to an ICU handoff tool. Working with them to create a mobile version. So for those that have Epic in their institutions, they may be aware of an app called Haiku that you can have on your phone that can help with the handoff, you know, getting the information right at your fingertips when maybe you're doing an OR to PACU handoff and then like. We've got a lot of research going on with our individual members, folks that are both working together and working individually to improve handoffs. Megan Lane-Fall is working on a large multi-center study called Hattrick, looking at handoffs in the ICU, with folks, collaborating with her from MHC across the country. And we're looking for, you know, additional opportunities to create sort of multi-center collaborations and research as we go forward to really identify the best practices, and back them with evidence, for handoffs. I think we've got a couple of folks that are really interested in how artificial intelligence and machine learning can help in the handoff process. I think that work is early. And people are thinking about it and thinking about how to test that a little bit and see what kind of progresses we can make with, you know, with the advances that are happening with this sort of vast amount of computing technology that's at our fingertips on a daily basis. Ultimately, I think we would love to be able to create create a toolkit, an implementation toolkit for institutions, right? To be able to say, you know, hey, Jed, you want to improve handoffs at your institution? Here, take a look at this, right? And give you the background, make it easy for you to light the fire, so to speak, under the folks at your institution, say, this is a problem and there's a tool, we know how to fix it, and then give you the tools to be able to make that change, right? To be able to help individuals with the change management that's always required when implementing a new process. When you're asking people who've been doing things a certain way for so long to now do things a little bit differently, it's never easy. People will always say, well, I've been doing this way for 25 years. Who are you to come in and tell me I got to do it differently now? So how do you manage that, right? And that's true for any change initiative, any quality improvement initiative that needs to be done. But it takes a little bit of practice and work and having the right sort of tools to be able to help you with just general change management, I think, are just as important as the change you're trying to make. So I think we're thinking about all this stuff. This is where the work of the MHC is. We need more help. So You know, if you're interested in being involved or doing this work at your own institution or working or learning from others, you know, we'd love to have your listeners, you know, come to the website and submit their name there and get involved.
Yeah, fabulous. And yeah, how can, let's say people want to get involved. They hear this and they think this is great. This is exciting work. It's a way I could, you know, sort of get involved and have a focus in my career, or early graduates, for example. Jamie, what should they do to get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. The first thing, as Alok mentioned, is come to our website. So it's super simple, www.handoffs.org. That's all you have to remember. I'm sure it'll be in the show notes as well. And you can peruse a ton of different resources that we have there, different cognitive aids that have been put together, different guides to implementation, a lot about education surrounding handoffs, and then looking at some of the literature that's we've talked about here and that our different MHC members have published. And there you can sign up for a mailing list so that you'll know about future opportunities. You'll get our blog posts in the future as well. The second way is you can follow us on Twitter or X. We're just at Periop Handoffs. It's really simple. And we post things a couple of times a week. So sharing the latest in terms of literature, thought-provoking questions. We love to hear about great examples of handoffs, opportunities that have come out of them. We had a recent blog post about your worst handoffs. So we'd love to hear about those too. You can certainly get in touch with me or Loke directly. Contact information will be in the show notes. And we'd love to have you join us at ASA this October in Philadelphia. So we have at least one panel on perioperative handoffs and, again, the AI and machine learning opportunity there. So come see MHC members, talk with us. And then we have a general body meeting every year around ASA as well. So that's open to other folks that are interested in getting involved. It would be a great opportunity to get plugged in, and we'd be really happy and really excited to have you.
Well, that is fabulous, and I'm sure people will be taking advantage of those opportunities. This has been great. We've covered so much good stuff. Let's turn to the portion of our show where we make random recommendations. Jamie, let's start with you. Do you have something that you would recommend people check out?
Yeah, I'm going to recommend an app. It's called Stellarium. And I came across this recently. So over my children's spring break, we went to Southern California and we went to Joshua Tree National Park, which, if you don't know, is a phenomenal place to do some stargazing. And so I don't have a lot of background. I don't know my stars and my constellations very well. So I found this app, and it's essentially like a virtual planetarium. And what you do is, you know, you go out, you look at the stars, and you hold up your phone. And essentially through your camera, it will kind of enhance the brightness and help you to better identify the stars. And you can put a filter on that has the different constellations. So it helps you to pick those out. It names certain stars that are in each of them. And you can actually select which type of constellation. So different cultures have different constellations, you know, for the same figures. So you can try out different ones, learn about different cultures that way. It was kind of a really fun experience and something anybody can check out in their backyard at night.
That sounds incredibly cool. Thank you. Alok, how about you?
So I'll leave folks with two things. So I think the last television series that my wife and I just finished was the most recent season of True Detective on HBO, True Detective Night Country with Jodie Foster. Totally outside of the world of everything we do every day in the OR and in the hospital. But we enjoy these sort of mystery suspenseful shows, and it was just a great season. So I highly recommend people check that out. I would leave one other recommendation, which is for a book I'm listening to now called Rest by Alex Soojung King Pang. And it's Rest, Why You Get More Done When You Work Less. And so I think for so many of us, we spend so much time in the pursuit of all the things that are important to us at work that we sometimes forget that actually taking a little bit of time for ourselves, whatever that means, it may be, you know, it may be physical activity, which may not be what we think of as rest specifically, right? But getting out to exercise or spending time with family or taking a sabbatical if you happen to be at that stage in your career where you can actually makes us more productive in all the other things that we want to do. And I think it's a great, just a great read. I'm listening to it actually on Audible. So I think that's what I would recommend. I think it's a great, great reminder of and a quick read too. So
no, that sounds absolutely great. And I would love to figure out how to work less and get more done. So we'll check it out. I am going to recommend. So my wife and I just finished the mini series on Apple TV called Lessons in Chemistry, which I will say was not my favorite, but the book Lessons in Chemistry is fabulous. And so if you haven't already read it, I'm pretty sure I shouted out this book way back when I read it, but I will say again that the book Lessons in Chemistry is absolutely fabulous. If you want to see how it's adapted on TV, you can watch the miniseries. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't anywhere near as good as the book. So I will give a firm recommendation for the book Lessons in Chemistry and a mild one for the TV series. All right. Alok and Jamie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right. Hopefully you got as much out of that as I did. That was really fantastic. Let us know what you thought. Go to the website, acrac.com, where you can leave a comment. Others can learn from what you have to say. If you are a fan of the show, you can follow us. We're on Twitter. We are on Facebook. We are on Reddit. And we are on Instagram. I'm at Jay Wolpaw on Twitter, and we're at Acrac Podcast. And you can find us on all those other platforms as well. If you are a fan of the show, please consider going to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leaving a comment and a rating. It really helps others find the show. If you'd like to support the making of the show, please consider going to patreon.com/acrac. That's patreon.com/accrac, where you can become a patron of the show. Even if it's just a dollar or two that you pledge, it makes a big difference and we really appreciate it. You can also make donations anytime by going to paypal.me/acrac. Or looking up Jay Wolpaw on Venmo. Thank you so much to those who have already made donations and become patrons. We really appreciate it. Thanks, as always, to our fantastic ACRAC crew. Sonia Aminat is our tech lead, and Sophia Wu is our social media manager. William Mao is our production assistant. Thank you so much for the great work that you do. Our original ACRAC music is by Dr. Dennis Kuo. You can check out his website at studymusicproject.com. All right. That is it for today. For the ACRAC Podcast, I'm Jed Wolpaw. Thanks for listening. Remember, what you're doing out there every day is really important and valued.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.